Okay, good morning. So we're right at the top of the Amud on Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Says the Mishnah, HaMakdish Nechaseh V'Haisa Lav Ksubas Isha. So we're going to talk now in a couple of cases, very interesting schemes. The scheme works as follows, basically. So if you had a case of a person who takes all of his money, all of his stuff, and he's makdish it, okay, he sends it off to Hekdish, he pledges it to Hekdish. But he's married. So that means on some of his property, he has a lien to pay off his ksuba. So what happens is, after he donates everything to Hekdish, okay, what his wife, he then says, you know, to his wife, here, listen, we've got no money. So here's the plan. I'll divorce you. You get paid off your ksuba. We remarry. So I've still given all my stuff to Hekdish. Look what a big, nice person I am. And here's this way that we can get all that money back. You just collect your ksuba from it, and then everything will be fine, everything will be good, we'll be rich again, and we'll be able to get married. So in order to avoid this, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Eliezer says, Kishi Yigar Shena, when a husband would divorce his wife in a circumstance in which he would have no money, meaning when he gave all his money to Hekdish, Yadur Hana, he has to make a promise, he has to swear that he will not take her back forever. Okay? Because that will avoid him being able to do this because he's unable to remarry her, so he won't be getting any benefit from it. Okay? Says Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua, Omer, no, Eino Tzarech, you don't need to do that. What is the reason of Rabbi Yehoshua? We're going to go through that in the Gemara at length. Okay. Kayose Bedavar, similarly, you can have a different type of case. Amar Shem Ben Gamliel, Af Ha'arev Li'isha Biksuvasa, V'haya Bala Megarsha Yadi Ren Hana. If you had a case where someone, you know, was a guarantor on a ksuba. And again, the husband has no money. The husband's got no money. And he says, listen, dear, I'll tell you this plan. We have, you know, our very nice friend, Mr. So-and-so, who's guaranteeing your ksuba. I'll divorce you. You'll get paid, again, 20K from him. Then we'll remarry and we'll be rich. Not quite rich, but okay. Fine. This is an interesting idea. So says Rav Gamliel, and even in that case, so too, if the husband divorces his wife and there is a guarantor on the ksuba that's going to have to pay up money, yadirana hana, he also has, they have to promise they're not going to marry each other. Because maybe he's just planning on, you know, this using this scheme to take someone else's money and he's going to take his wife back. Right? So therefore, in these cases, says the Mishnah, we try to avoid people, you know, playing tricks. Okay? In the first case, with Hekdish, it's a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. In the second case, Rabbi Shimon Galil says, even when it comes to some sort of guarantor or co-signer, however we try to translate Arev, we'll talk about an Arev and a Kablan later on, in that case, presumably everybody would agree that it's relevant. We don't see any machlokes on that. Okay, says the Gemara, B'maikam Ifliki, what is the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua? How come Rabbi Eliezer is concerned for this and Rabbi Yeshua not? Right? What's going on? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Eliezer, Savar Adam Osek and Nunyala Hekdish. Rabbi Eliezer is concerned, says the Gemara, that people will actually do this low, despicable thing against Hekdish. Meaning, if to do it against someone else, apparently people, you know, were worried that people would pull off such schemes. But to do it against Hekdish, to take money from the Beis HaMikdash like this, that's really low. We don't assume, you know, says Rabbi Eliezer, we still assume people are going to do what it says Rabbi Yehoshua. Now, we don't assume anybody's going to do that. Rabbi Yehoshua, Savar, Ein Adam Osek Anun Yala Hekdish, someone's not going to do that. Therefore, says Rabbi Yehoshua, you know, you don't need to make them promise that they won't remarry because, you know, no one would stoop so low as to steal money from Hekdish in this way.
Don't Pasdins all own ksubas? We can't let this guy just marry anyways. Remarry?
Own?
I mean, I don't know what you're...
They could also... We learned once that you can that the bezin could nullify a marriage, anyways.
Okay. I mean, hafkas kiddushin is an interesting sugya, but first of all, it is extremely, extremely limited in scope. Like extremely, there has to be very valid halachic reasons relating to.
No, what I'm saying, in other words, he can't. Instead of saying I won't marry my wife again, how does he get remarried to his wife again?
He gives her a ring and he says, "Harayad Megudesh Esli." What's kind of question?
The lashon of the Mishnah is not remarriage. The lashon of the Mishnah is hana'a.
Yeah, but if you see clearly from Rashi and you see the end of the Mishnah, Yachzir es Ishto.
Yeah, no, I understand right. That. But what I'm saying is that it's even a stronger oath than merely not marrying her.
Right. I mean, I'll tell you why I presented it in that way. It is a stronger oath than not marrying her, but I presented it that way because we have a rule, which Gemara is going to invoke in a little while, of Ein Adam, Ein Adam, what's it called? Ein Adam, Chote Velo Lo, there we are.
It says enough. So this, it says enough.
Right? I know, but the way that Rashi explains it, based on the end of the Mishnah, where Rabbi Sharon Gamliel says it himself, says v'yachzir es ishto. That's what we're worried about. That's a way you simply do this as a, you know, as being Gadur Hana, but that's really what the Mishnah is saying.
A guarantor has no recourse to get his money back.
We're going to talk about exactly what a guarantor is required to do in the later part of the Gemara. There are certain cases in which he absolutely does.
And we're worried he's going to make play around with Hektish, but he'll obey the he'll go by the oath.
Apparently, I mean, it's just that we can enforce it in that way, right? It just has to be something enforceable in court. At the end of the day, legally speaking, if he were to do this, it would work. It would be a legal loophole. It's not, you know, that we're worried that he's such a big avari and he's going to do this, but he's not going to do that. It's simply that we have to make it illegal. Okay? But Beis Din cannot use Hafkas Kiddushin to stop them from marrying here. That's just not an option. Okay. Continues the Gemara. So one possibility is that it's a machlokas whether or not a person would be willing to play around with Hektish to this extent. Okay? Says the Gemara, but we got a problem. This that Rav Huna said, Shchiv Miraf, you have someone on their deathbed. Shehiktish kol nechasav, and he's maktish everything he has. However, Ve'amar, and he says, Mana leploni biyadi. But he also says that I owed some guy $100. What's the halacha? Says Rav Huna, Ne'emani's believed, Chazaka, because we have an established rule, Ein Adam Osekinunya al Hektish, that a person does not perform shirkir with Hektish. So ask the Gemara, Lema Ketanai Amar Lishmatze, he's saying this as a sweeping statement that everybody agrees with. Are you telling me that he only said this according to one opinion? That's impossible. It must be that everybody agrees, says the Gemara, that a person would not play trickery on Hektish, and if so, we cannot use that to explain the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. And says the Gemara, lo, ad kan lo pligi, that's not necessarily true, says the Gemara, ad kan lo pligi ela bibari. The machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer says a person would play tricks against Hektish, and Rabbi Yeshua says a person wouldn't play tricks against Hektish. That machlokas is where? For a healthy person. Aval b'shchiv meira, but when it comes to someone who's on their deathbed, divrei akolina adamosek and unyala Hektish, everybody agrees that a person will not play tricks against Hektish. My taima, says the Gemara, ein adam chotiv elo lo. Because there's a rule that we have, a person doesn't sin so someone else will benefit. If I myself am going to benefit from it, then maybe it's worth it for me to do an avera like this and, you know, steal some money from Hektish. However, you know, if the guy's going to die, for the Yerusha, he doesn't care so much to do so many averos. Therefore, even the opinion that here says we would be concerned that someone would do trickery against Hektish, namely Rabbi Eliezer, would agree in the case of Shchiv Meira that he wouldn't, and that's why Rav Huna made his statement. All clear? Okay. Very good.
You mentioned the years of ownership he has on his deathbed.
Sorry?
Not to mention the years of ownership he has on his deathbed. He's about to go
through
his world.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. Okay. Ika da Ami, there are those who say no. Bibari de kule amalo pligi, even that this would be even stated in regards to a healthy person. That the Adam Ose Kanunya al Hektish, or the Ein Adam, really the version we're going to use is the Adam Ose Kanunya al Hektish, and everybody agrees, meaning even Rabbi Yeshua agrees, that a person would stoop so low to try to pull this trickery against Hektish. V'acha ben neder shehudar barabim kamifli, and they're arguing about the status of a neder, an oath which was taken in public. Okay? Mar Savar yesh lo hafara, Mar Savar ein lo hafara. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he says, okay, it does not have any way of being annulled. Therefore, he says, we're going to make you take this neder because that will make you unable to trick Hektish. Because once you make this neder, it cannot be annulled, and therefore it will stop you from taking back your wife. However, Rabbi Yoshua is of the opinion that yesh lo hafara, such a neder can be annulled, and therefore even taking the neder won't do anything for you because you can still go ahead and, you know, undo the neder and you'll still be able to go ahead and trick Hektish. Okay? V'ibay, same if you want, you could say the kulei alma neder shehudar barav miyesh lafar. Or we could play again around a little bit with the case and say, no, really everybody agrees that neder shehudar barabim, an oath that was sworn, that was taken in public, does have a far. V'hachav neder shehudar al das rabim kamifliki. And the case of the Mishnah is talking about where the person was instructed in public to take such an oath by a bezdin, whatever it is. Okay? So it's not that it was taken in front of a lot of people, it's that the instruction came al das rabim. So that would be the argument between them, Kamiflagi. And that again, Rabbi Yoshua would hold, it doesn't matter, you can still be made for it, therefore no point in taking such an oath. However, Rabbi Eliezer would hold, no, the oath is valid and stands forever and you can't get out of it, therefore it's important to take such an oath. Ah, yes, the Gemara Velahata Amar Amemar, but we have something which Amemar said. Neder Shehuda Barabim Yeshlo Hafar Al Das Rabbim Lo Hafar, a general rule that anything which was taken Barabim that does have Hafara, you can sort of get that one annulled. Al Das Rabbim, but if it was taken Al Das Rabbim, which we just said in the second case of the Gemara, is a machlokes. That would be, according to Amemar, Ein Lo Hafara, that he makes again a general sweeping statement, say that everybody would presumably agree that there is no ability to annul such a vow. Lema ketanayim l'shmatzei, are we really going to say that he makes this explicit statement and it's against one of the tanayim? No, it must be according to everybody. Number two, v'su, furthermore, Rabbi Yoshua omer eno tzarich, eno moel mi ba'ilei. If Rabbi Yoshua really felt this way, that we're worried about anamos tekenuni ala hektish, and we're, even if the person's going to make a vow, you can still annul it, he shouldn't have said you don't need to make the vow. He should have said, you can try to take the vow, but unfortunately it won't help the situation. That's what he should have explained in the Mishnah. He shouldn't have argued on Rabbi Eliezer saying, he thinks you need to, I think you don't need to. He should have said, you can try it, but it unfortunately doesn't work. That was really his point of the machloka. So that's what he sort of should have said in the Mishnah then. So says the Gemara, fine. Right? Omer, eno tzarech, eno moel mi bayalei. He should have said, eno moel. Hacha b'she'ela dehektish kamifli. The Gemara concludes that their argument is actually about she'ela dehektish. Anybody know what she'ela is?
Borrowing.
She'ela is sometimes borrowing. There's another type of she'ela, though, when it comes to vows. And when it comes to promises and pledges. Don't tell the shul about this. Anyways. She'ela means when the chacham will come to you, and you can go in front of the bezdin or a chacham, and he'll say, did you know when you made the pledge at this? And this was the case. I was telling the first stuff. There was an idiot in my days at Nair who heard about, you know, I guess he learned Mishnayis Nazir, and he heard about the possibility of becoming a Nazir, so he figured for a joke, he would be Mekabel Naziris upon himself. Now that's obviously not a very good thing to do for a number of reasons. Most specifically is that you can't get out of it nowadays, because the Naziris ends with what? Korbanos, right? So that presents a bit of an issue as to how that would be resolved nowadays. Anyways, I remember in yeshiva, after this guy was Mekabel Naziris for, again, whatever stupid reason he thought, they did, you know, she'ela on his Naziris. They called him in. The Rosh Yeshiva made a little bezdin there, and they told the guy, did you know that this and this and this? Did you know? Poor guy's like crying. Anyways, but I think he learned his lesson, and that's where they did she'ela. There's another story I also shared with them, because we've got plenty of time, because here, you know, we'll still let you out a few minutes early, don't worry. There's another story, and again, I don't know the source of this, but we'll tell it in the story of Mashal. A person made a neder not to have any sugar, okay? Whatever it is. I mean, obviously this is not a realistic neder, not to have any sugary foods, fine, we'll say it like that. We're making up the Mashal anyways. So, anyways, after a while, he decides this is really hard. You know, he tries to go into Bezdin. But when he was noted, he realized that he was not going to be able to have any ice cream. He's not going to be able to have any of this. He's not going to be able to have any cotton candy. He's not going to be able... So Bezdin calls him in. And they say, excuse me, sir. You know, did you know that you wouldn't be able to have this? Yeah, I knew that. Did you know you wouldn't be able to have this wonderful food? Yeah, I knew that too. You know that you were going to have this? Yeah. He says, listen, to be honest with you guys, like, I really thought of everything. I thought it through. And I was really willing to accept it. Says, did you know that it was going to be such a pain for us to be able to annul it? No, I didn't know that. Okay. Right? Continues the Gemara. So anyway, this says, the Gemara is what we're arguing about when it comes to Hafara. Can you, when it comes to She'ela for Hektish. Sorry, I'm thinking Hafara because we've just been talking about that until now. She'ela for Hektish. Can you be She'ela on Hektish? If something comes up after you made a pledge to Hektish, that had I known that this was going to happen, I would never have made the pledge. Can you do that? Okay? So says the Gemara, this is the Machlokas Valtanya, and we have a Braisa that sort of really puts this out. First it quotes, you know, the Machlokas in the Mishnah, Maktish Nechasa Vaisal of Ksuvas Isha, if you were Maktish, all your stuff, and you had a Ksuva there, Belezer, Omer, Kshim, Agarshi, Yadur Hana, when he's divorcing her, you have to be Madur Hana, Rabbi Chua Omer, Eino Sarach, you don't need to. V'amar Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon says, Hein Hein Divrei Beis Shammai, Hein Hein Divrei Beis Hillel. This Machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer actually corresponds to a Machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Shebeis Shammai Omrim, Hektish Ta'us Hektish. Let's say someone is Maktish, and they realize this was a big mistake. Can they be She'ela on it, says Beis Shammai? No. It remains Hektish. There's no way to get out of it. This was the opinion of Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Yeshua?
Rabbi Yeshua.
Why?
Because Rabbi Lazar has to come up with a reason to stop him from doing it. So Rabbi Yeshua says you don't need it, or it doesn't work. would have to be following Beit Shammai, which doesn't make any sense.
No, this it's the other. It should be the other way around.
Rabbi Eliezer is often right, like Beit Shammai anyway. That's
right. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion, right, that you can't take it back. Meaning everybody's going to agree the woman can collect her ksuba from something which has a lien on it. The question is, can he take his money back from Hekdesh? Right? So Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion he can't take it back from Hekdesh. The only way he would be able to make money on this deal and to be able to stop Hekdesh from getting his money is by doing this trick. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer is choshesh for the trick, and he says you've got to take a hana. You've got to be madir hana. However, Beis Hillel omrim hektish tos eino hektish. If you did it by mistake, it's not hektish, which is corresponding to the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, saying that if the guy will come to Bez and say, I didn't realize I was going to divorce my wife, he can get it back anyways. Okay, so it's a hektish tos. So therefore, he's not concerned for this because it's a legal thing for his wife to take her ksuba from there. He could just have easily have come to Bez and said, this was a mistake that I was maktish, I didn't realize I had to pay off this debt, so there's nothing really wrong in that happening. Okay, so again, the shitas will correspond in the orders that we said them. That's a good question. I don't know. Presumably, there's got to be some time frame. The guy can't come back, 50 years later and say, by the way, that was a mistake I made, I lost money in my business afterward. I don't think that would work. It's got to be some sort of relevant time, I would assume, but I don't know. Okay? Says the Gemara further. So, again, to conclude, the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua relates to the question of if someone was machdish betaos, can they get it back? Rabbi Yehoshua says you can get it back, so therefore we don't have to worry about this trickery that you're going to play, that your wife's going to get it back because there's a lien on the property that you gave to Hekdesh, whereas Rabbi Eliezer says you can't get it back, and therefore he says we're worried for this trickery that you're going to do. Okay, this is the conclusion of the Gemara on this point. Now we get to a very interesting Gemara. Anybody who has kids in Kolo may want to leave the room. Says the Gemara, V'chein ha'ir Rabban Shimon Ben Gamliel Omer. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, just to remind us, in the Mishnah, has talked about even when you have a guarantor on the ksuba, we're also concerned for this type of trickery that someone may collect from the third party who's guaranteed it, and again, then they'll get remarried and keep the money together. Says the Gemara, Moshe Bar Atzri, Arva de Kalase Hava, Rav Huna Brei, Turamei Rabbanan Hava. So we've got the beautiful family tree. Rav Huna's father is a guy by the name of Moshe Bar Atzri, and Rav Huna marries his wife, and Rav Huna's father, must have been a rich guy, and a friendly guy, decides to guarantee his daughter-in-law's ksuba, okay? So again, his son Rav Huna is getting married to Eshes Rav Huna, and he guarantees her ksuba, okay? And Rav Huna was also, a Talmud Chacham. Hava, v'dechik alei milsan. In fact, as Talmud Chachamim sometimes go, business wasn't going so well for him, okay? He was not only Talmud Chacham, but he also didn't have that much money. So, here's what happened. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Leka denasvi eitzal l'Rav Huna, d'ligarish l'dvisu v'tisbak suvasa me'abu al hadri me'hadri. Abaye says, really? Has no one come up with this brilliant idea to tell Rav Huna that he should simply divorce his wife? His wife will collect her giant ksuba from his father, and then they'll get remarried. Why doesn't anybody tell him to do that? What? He is a Kohen. That's the Gemara's conclusion. Very good. Amar le Rava. Rava said, V'anan yidor hana'atnan. Says Rava, that's a very nice idea. Good job that you're mechavin. Says Rava, that's a very nice idea, but we have a Mishnah which says you can't do that. It says you have to be madir hana, that you will not take her back in the case of an Arev. This is literally the case in the Mishnah of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So how could you suggest that? The Abaye says, Rava, you're too practical. You're too ideal. It's true, in an ideal world, they'd have everybody do this. But practically speaking, Atu called a Megarish Bevedina Megarish. Do you think everybody that gives their wife a get actually does it in court formally? Meaning there are ways to divorce her and he can get the ksuba paid off without actually having to go into court and swear on this. Meaning, Eina Hanami, maybe that's a letter of the law of the Mishnah, but there are ways to get around it. That's a simple reading of Abaye here. Right? Basically, Yelach, right as Rashi says, Yelach Betzina V'Yigarshena. It's like the opposite of eloping. Right? People maybe do this in Israel. I don't know. Lesof comes out at the end. Iglai Milsa turned out to Kohen Hava that he was actually a Kohen and they couldn't perform this shtick. Very good answer, by the way. Okay? Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Basar Aniya Azla Aniyusa. You see, poorness sticks to the poor people. Poor guy, basically, but he can never get out of it. Says the Gemara. This is such a bizarre story. Umi Amar Abaye Hachi? Would Abaye, who we would assume to be a paradigm of ethics and virtues, really suggest such a trickery be done? V'ha'amar Abaye, and in fact, we even have another place where Abaye talks about a similar case. Abaye himself said, Ezel Rasha Arum, who's considered an evil plotter? Zehamesi Eitzel Limkor Benachasim Kiravan Shimon Ben Gamliel. That Abaye himself said, if you have a case where someone was dying, and he says, I'd like my stuff first to go to you, then afterwards, give it to a third party. Okay, he says, you get it, I guess, for 10 years, whatever it is, for 2 minutes, whatever the amount of time is, and then it should be transferred to someone else. Now, let's say party number one decides to do the following scheme. He sells the land that he has. According to Rosh Hashanah Ben Gamliel, we will not take the land for person number two away from who person number one sold it to. So it turns out person number one, rather than getting the field for 10 years, got his field for whatever period, and now he also gets the money for all the fields, and he completely stole it from the second guy who was supposed to receive it. It says, Abaye, this is the example of a Rasha. So how could the same Abaye try to make such a trick? What's going on? Says the Gemara, and here's where I said it gets worrisome, Breishani v'tzurva mirabananshani. Number one, if it's his kid, it's different. The assumption of the Gemara, the simple reading of the Gemara, is to say that the father wouldn't mind so much in this case. Not that if the father would mind, that it would be completely mutter because it's his son, but also tzurva mirabananshani. When the guy's a Tamar Chacham, we got to get him, you know, money, says Abaye. So Abaye said, I would have been willing to encourage this in this case. Okay, that's why I said, anybody with kids in Kolal, you know, is going to get nervous now. Okay, v'tape bukle as the Gemara, di'arev diksuva lo mishtabit. Ask the Gemara, why didn't we understand this to be saying that in general, the rule is, and this sounds bizarre, but we'll explain it in just a moment, that someone who co-signs on a ksuba doesn't actually have to pay up when the time comes. Okay? That's, says the Gemara, why don't we say it from that? That meaning you wouldn't be able to make the father pay here, because even though he was an Arif, he doesn't actually have to pay for the ksuba. So answers the Gemara as we turn the page, it's because he wasn't an Arif, he was a Kablan. Now, let's explain these two terms before we get into it. An Arif is a general sort of cosigner guarantor of a lower level, okay? That means if the borrower would default on the loan, on the ksuba, whatever it is, then the Arif would have to pay. However, there's another type of cosigner, another type of guarantor called a Kablan. A Kablan comes from the Shorash of Kabbalah, meaning I am going to be mekabel on it for myself, right? An Arev is more like a friend. A Kablan is saying, I'm taking this on, and there are many cases in which a Kablan actually would have to pay, even if the borrower has money. Okay, so that's severe of a transaction that he's entering into. Okay? So says the Gemara, in this case, the father was a Kablan, not an Arev. Meaning it's true an Arev wouldn't have had to pay back in such a circumstance, right? However, a Kablan would, and he accepted, the father accepted it as a Kablan. Okay, the simple way of reading the Gemara. Han ichalaman damar Kablan afagav delach nechasim lelo v'mishtabed. This works well according to the opinion that a Kablan is required to pay even when at the time of the loan, the borrower has no assets. Right? So meaning, there's a machlokes, as the Gemara is going to explain, if the Kablan accepts this upon himself when the borrower lechatchila has no money. Okay, so meaning, a guy comes in completely bankrupt and he takes out a $10,000 loan and someone becomes a Kablan on that loan. Is the Kablan then required to pay it back knowing that at the beginning, you know, he knew he was almost going to be paying this back? So one opinion says, yes, he still has to pay it back. The other opinion says, Elamanda Amar, Islay Mishtabit. Lassal Mishtabit, that it's only when the borrower actually has any sort of land or property or wealth, when he's taking out the loan, that the Kablan is responsible to pay for it, right? My Ikal Amemar, what can we say? Says the Gemara, because if that's the case, we're assuming that Rav Huna was poor even when he got married, therefore, even though his father was a Kablan, according to this opinion, his father wouldn't have been required to pay out the ksuba. Why? Because at the time that the ksuba was signed, he had no money, Rav Huna. So therefore, it would only have been a valid kablanus, so to say, acceptance if he would have had some money, and that's why he accepted to sort of to co-sign on it. But not if he knew he was taking it on the whole time for himself. That's ridiculous. So Ibai Seima, if you want, you can say Rav Huna Havalevi Shtaduf. The simple answer would be to say, Rav Huna was actually richer when he got married. He only got poor after he got married. Okay, Ibai Seima, another answer would could say, that when it comes to a father and son, even though it's true by a normal kablanus arrangement, we wouldn't be able to make this person pay, but here we know that the father actually did agree to pay through on this. Why? Because he's sticking up for his son. Okay, so either way, even though in a normal Kabbalan arrangement, you know, if someone had no money at the time that the Kabbalan signed on, you wouldn't be able to make the Kabbalan pay for the loan? In this case, you would, either because of the father and son or because Rav Huna had money at the time of the loan. I know it's a little bit confusing. Any questions? Again, so to summarize, Arev is less responsible. Kabbalan is a machlokes, when they would be responsible. According to one opinion, even if the borrower has no money, they're still responsible at the time of the loan, I should say. Whereas according to the other opinion, it's only if the borrower had some money at the time of the loan that they're responsible. In this case, however, either Rav Huna had money at the time of the ksuba, or it's because his father's his son, so we assume that he accepted it upon himself.
You're saying money in a general sense, or are you talking about land and property? Because money, you don't have a shibud.
Right, I would say land and property, seems to be. Right, less than a chasim. Yeah. So yes, I would say land and property and not necessarily money. Yes, thank you. Okay, so let's continue in the Gemara. Okay, and the Gemara is now going to go through all of the cases where Arevim and Kablanim are actually going to be responsible, right? The Itmar, that we've said, Arev de Ksuba, when you have a regular Arev, a cosigner on a Ksuba, Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed, he's actually not responsible, okay? And we continue. Kablan de Baal Chov, in the reverse, exact, furthest extreme. If you have a Kablan on a loan, Divrei HaKol Mishtabed, he's always going to be mishubit to pay it. Arev divalchov, a kablan diksuba, but in the two middle cases, if someone is an arev type of guarantor on a loan, or if he is a kablan on a ksuba, pligi, there's a machlokas. Ikalamanda amar, and this is explaining the machlokas we had earlier. There is one mandamar who says, isle nichsi lelove mishtabed, lesle lo mishtabed, that only in cases where, again, at the time of the loan, the borrower has property, will the these arev on a loan or kablan on a ksuba have to pay. The ikalamandam, and there's another opinion that says afagav de lesle mishtabe, that even if the person never had anything, they're still responsible to pay. The hilchasabekulu and the halacha is in all of them afagav de lesle nam mishtabe, that no matter how much the borrower has at the time of the loan or the ksuba, you're going to have to pay as a cosigner, whether an arev, whether a kablan, except for one case. Livarme arev diksuba, except for the case of an arev in a ksuba, the arev will not actually have to pay out in that case. De afagav di islay, that even though he had, meaning even if the person getting married had nechasim at the time, lo mishtabe, the person will not have to pay my time. Why? Mitzvah ka'avid, by guaranteeing this ksuba, you're allowing a mitzvah to happen. It's a wonderful thing. Velomidi chasre, or velomidi chasre, however you want to read this, there's 12 ways to interpret this line. The point is, he shouldn't lose out, and the woman didn't lose out at all, so therefore we're not going to actually make him pay in these circumstances, because he only did good, and that's the way this Gemara ends for now. Okay. Ad kan, again, this basically tells us the rules of Arev and Kablan. What comes out lahalacha at the end of this brisa is that for an Arev on a ksuba, you will not have to end up being mishabed to pay. On the other hand, for all other cases, you will. Even if the person had no money at the time of the loan or the ksuba, if you're a Kablan in either case, or an Arev on a loan itself. Says the Gemara Viter. Okay, a story. Hahu Gavra, there was a man, Dizavnin Hulunechsei, who sold all his stuff. Vikagar Shaladivisu, and then he divorced his wife. So now, she has a shibud on all of his property, which he just sold to a third party. So again, a similar case to our Mishnah, except that now the guy's really going to be a millionaire. He sold his house, and now his wife's collecting his ksuba from his property. Brilliant. Okay? Shalcha Rav Yosef Rei de Rava, Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, sent Lekamei de Rav Papa. Okay, what should be the halacha? Arev tnan hektish tnan. It says in the Mishnah case of Arev. It says in the case of Mishnah case of hektish. Lokeach mahu. What will be the halacha in this case where the guy sold all his stuff? Will that also be a case in which we have to make him promise that he's not going to take back his wife? Amar lei tana kiruch lanech shivinezel. What, does the Tana have to be like a peddler and tell you every single possible case? That's not the way Mishnayos work. We can figure out that this case is also a case of trickery and you've got to make the guy swear. However, Naharda Yamri Naharda, they said, de tnan tnan, de lo tnan lo tnan. At the end of the day, no. Whatever it says in the Mishnah, you enforce. Whatever it doesn't say in the Mishnah, you don't enforce. And in this case, it only said the cases of Arev and Hekdish. You cannot enforce for the case of Lakicha. I see some concerned faces.
Strict constructionists.
Okay, I am not so sure about that. Amar of Misharshia says the Gemara continuing, my time of the Nahardai. Why would they say that? That doesn't make sense. Vishlama Hekdish. what the reason. So when it comes to Hekdesh, they say, it's okay, Mishum Revach to Hekdesh, you want to make sure Hekdesh keeps its money. Arev Nami, Mitzvah Hudavad. And again, when it comes to an Arev is doing a mitzvah. We don't want to have these people be out money if they're doing a mitzvah. We don't want the Beis HaMikdash to be out money. We don't want the Arev to be out money because he's doing a good thing, right? Right, Jalav Midi Chasri. And again, he shouldn't lose out for it. Ela Lokeach. But when it comes to a buyer beware, michti, you should check. He knows that everybody that's married has a ksuba, and therefore, amai nezel v'nizbon, ihu hu daftin anavshei, says he made a stupid business deal. When someone comes to you and says, would you like to buy any property that I have, he should realize that there's a chance that this is going to happen, and therefore, too bad. He bought it, his loss. And that's why the Mishnah doesn't say this case, say nehardai. And that's where the Gemara concludes in this machlokas. According to one opinion, we say, obviously, you would have to make the person promise not to get remarried. According to the second person, we say, no, it's a case where the buyer should have been careful enough, because he should know that a person has shibud on some of his lands for his ksuba. Okay? End of the story. Says the Mishnah. Hamakdish nechasa v'aisalav ksubas isha uva'al chov. Ein ha'isha yechola ligbos ksubas v'na hektish v'lo ba'al chov es chovo. Again, if someone was makdish all his stuff, and he had either a ksuba or a loan owing to someone else, neither of them can actually go to Hekdesh and take their money, even though they're owed this money. Rather, what do you have to do? Elaha podeh, but the person himself who gave it, the person who gave the Hekdesh, podeh al menas litin lisha biksubasa ulaval chov es chovo. He has to redeem it, not with the full value, as we're going to see, with just a tiny amount of money, in order to give it back to her and in order to pay back the loan. Okay? This is what the Mishnah says. We're going to explain this in the Gemara. So too, another case. Higdish tishim mani. Tishim mana. If a person was makdish 90 mana, v'haya chovo mea mana, and he owed 100 mana, mosif owed dinar, the guy loans him an extra dinar, and with that dinar, the small amounts of money, upode sanechasim ha'ilu amanas litin lishak suvaso ba'chov es chovo, and with this one dinar, he gets back his 90 mana, and he gives it partially back for payment of this loan, or to pay back for his wife's Suba. Now, in reality, does the person have any right to be makdish when he has such a large loan? What do you think? We'll start a fight here in the room. Okay, let's say I have a mortgage for $500,000. Can I be makdish something to the Beis HaMikdash?
No.
Why not?
Belongs to someone else.
Belongs to someone else. Anybody would disagree with that?
You can't get stuck from a credit card. You do it.
You can. That's yours. It's your money. It's a credit card.
What do you mean? It's credit?
Credit card is that it's yours. It's like cash.
Credit card. Talk about now. You owe a guy $500,000. No credit cards. I have cash. I went to work today. I got paid. Can I give a donation to the Beis HaMikdash? Hektish.
Yes.
You say yes. You say no. Fine. We made our machlokas. Beautiful. Let's see what the Gemara has to say about this. Okay? Now, says the Gemara, Afal Pish Amra, sorry, Lama Lila Meimar HaPodeh Podeh, ask the Gemara, why do we even bother with this pidyon business? It's not his to give away! Says the Gemara, Mishum Dura Avo, Damar Avo, Shalo Yomru, Hektish Yotze Velo Pidyon. The truth is, says the Gemara, 100%, you had no right to make that Hektish, it doesn't work. It's not your money. So why are we making you be Podeh it for this, you know, penny that you're giving to Hektish? The answer is, it shouldn't look like Hektish is coming back from somewhere without Pidyon. Hektish requires Pidyon even for onlookers to see, and therefore we require you to be Poda'ed in this fashion. It continues the Gemara. Mas nisin deloka Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Tanya. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Im haya chovo keneged Hekdesho. Podeh v'im lav eino podeh. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, it depends on how large your debts are and how much you're being makdish. Says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, if the debt, okay, was equal to the amount that you gave to Hekdesh, or less than that, okay, then you can be podeh. However, v'im lav, but if the debt, like in the case of the Mishnah, was more than you gave to the Beis HaMikdash for Hekdesh, then you cannot redeem it. What exactly this means, which way it means, is a good question. Rashi brings both possibilities. Let's just say that again, it's, you cannot take it back, basically. Rabbanan would say no. Ad kama, how much would they say that you're allowed to give a gift of Hekdesh? Meaning, at the end of the day, what both of you are arguing about is a very fair machlokas. If I have a mortgage, does that mean I can never give something to the Beis HaMikdash? I don't give tzedakah because I owe someone money?
No, you own the house, though. You may have a mortgage, but you own the house.
But I owe someone $500,000.
No, they only get that money in the event that you default.
But the point is, the money you borrow is yours, or the house you buy is
fine,
yours.
Fine, I have a loan. Let's make it simpler. I have a loan.
The money's yours. You borrowed, and it's yours. That's what I would think.
I owe this person money.
Yes, you do. It. You're kind of the money when you borrow it. So you can.
And therefore what? I'm not saying it's someone else's money. I'm saying I owe the guy money. How dare I pay off my debts by giving a donation to the Beis HaMikdash before I pay this guy back? I owe him $90,000. Right?
I hear what you're saying, but
so on the other hand, it seems a little bit ludicrous to say...
If you have a big mortgage, you own the house.
Yes, but you also owe someone the amount of money for that house. Right? And that's why, if you don't pay it, they'll take it back.
You pay $1 million for a house, and then you sell it for $2 million, you get the $2 million.
Yes, but you still need to pay your $1 million lechatchila.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't think we're disagreeing. I just think the reality is, though, that seems a little bit bizarre, guys. Right? You agree with me to say that what you can't give tzedakah if you have a mortgage. You can't give tzedakah if you have a loan somewhere. I remember someone asking this question: is anybody mechuyev in meister nowadays if they're paying a mortgage? It's ostensibly a fair question. Says the Gemara, no. It depends. To say that someone can't give $5 to tzedakah just because they owe someone else money, the Gemara says that wouldn't be the case. What is the cutoff point? Says Rav Huna Bar Yehuda in the name of Sheshes, until half. Meaning, half of what a person owes, from half and above, if you give it over to the Beis HaMikdash, that doesn't work, and you have to put it back for a cent and give it back to your creditor. However, less than that, if someone wants to give a $10 gift to the Beis HaMikdash, and he owes, $100,000, that's not an issue, such hektish will work, and you'll pay from the rest of your money. Okay? Are we clear? This is what the Rabbana say, half of the amount of money that you owe. Okay, all good. Says the Mishnah. Afal pishi amru chayavi erkin v'mashkin and also, even though we said that when it comes to chayavi erkin, we can seize the person's property until they pay it up, meaning if they owe a certain amount of money, we can go in and take all their stuff. What do we leave the person with? No sin lo, we give him. Mazon shloshim yom, 30 days worth of food. Uksush ne'masar chodesh, 12 months worth of clothing. Mita mutzas, his bed with a bedspread. His sandalov and his shoes. Utfilov and his tefillin. Lo, and we give it to him. Avalo li'ishta ulevanov. This is a good way to get the person to pay up. His wife and his kids don't get any of these wonderful luxuries of, food and stuff like that. Imhaya uman, and if he was a tradesman. Nosin lo shnei klei umnos mikol min v'min. We give each type of tool that he needs, we give him two of those to keep. The rest of them we take. So for example, Charash nosin lo shnei matzad and shnei magiros. If he was a woodworker, we give him two little hatchets and two saws or whatever these things mean. Rabbi Eliezer Omahaya Ikar, if he was a wagon driver, nosin lo tzimdo, you can give him his animals that will pull the wagon. Chamar, if he was a donkey driver, nosin lo chamaro, you give him his chamar. Hayalom, and this is only the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, Hayalom min echad maruba min echad muat. Let's say the guy had 17 saws and one hatchet. So what do we do in that case? Are we going to sell the other 15 saws that he gets above his two saws that he's allowed to keep, that the Beis HaMikdash takes, and then we buy him another hatchet, so now he has two saws and two hatchets? Says the Mishnah, no. Hayalom min echad maruba min echad muat. Ein omer limkor sa maruba v'likach min amuat. Elanosin lo shnei min shal maruba. V'kol sheyesh lo min amuat. Meaning we're going to give him two of his saws, which he has 17, the remaining 15 go to the Beis HaMikdash, and the other hatchet, he only gets one, just like he had all along. And the final case of the Mikdash, Mishnah, Hamakdash Nechasav, Malin Lo Tefillin. And if someone says, all of my Nechasim will go to Hakdash, then even his Tefillin are consecrated and have to go to Hakdash, and he has to redeem them. Yes?
I find this, half is kind of arbitrary. Some companies just run a big debt, but they're able from their income to pay it off as they're going along. So it's, and I can think of one company now that's, the financing is really weird, but
right,
they're managing to do it.
Right. So, okay. I mean, that's what Chazal decided.
It's arbitrary.
I just want to finish up here so we can get out, and then I will talk to you.
Okay.
I get your point, and we can have a talk about it. But I feel like it's kind of tangential relative to finishing up here. Okay. And I said I would finish at least 2 minutes early, so we've got 3 minutes. My time, I said, Zigamar, what's the reason that we give him all this stuff? To Amar Kra, v'machu me'erkecha. What does it mean, machu me'erkecha? Chazal darshan, hachayehu me'erkecha. Even when you're seizing his assets, you should still allow him to live from this. Avalo le'ishta uvana, but you don't give to his wife and kids. Why don't you give to his wife and kids? My time, hu me'erkecha, avalo ishta uvana me'erkecha. It says, you're making him live, but not his wife and kids, meaning those you really don't need to worry about. Eliezer Omer Haya Iker Nosin Lo Timdor. Eliezer says that again, if he was some sort of wagon driver, we gave him his animals to pull his wagon. V'Rabbanan, what about according to Rabbanan? Why wouldn't they say that he gets his stuff? If a regular Uman gets his tools, why wouldn't the wagon driver get to keep his animals? V'Rabbanan, Hanu Lav Klei Umnos Ninu Ela Nechasim Ninu. At the end of the day, animals would be considered to be property and not, you know, considered to be tools of a trade, because that's what they generally are. Hayalo min echad, if you had one, and, you know, if you had one of one type of tool, we don't sell your other tools to get you a second one of that. Pshita says the Gemara, ki hechi disagile ad hashta, hashta nami sagile. Why would you assume that we should give him an extra one? He's been working with one the whole year. Why would we buy him an extra one, you know, just because he gave it to Hekdish? Says the Gemara, ma'u detemai, would have thought, ara idna davali le oshuli, hava moshli le, that until now, he could lend out to other people, and they would lend out to him. But now that he's only got two, he's not going to be able to lend out anymore. Hashta deleka demashile, no one's going to loan him. Lo, that you would think that we would get him a second tool, kamash malon, that we don't. Hamakdish es nechasa malin lo tfilin. Again, the final case of the Mishnah, that if someone gives Hekdish on all his stuff, tfilin are included in this. Hahugavra, story of a nevach case, to Zavninu lenech say, he sold all of his property. He said, I'm selling you all my property. The guy buys it. Also, the Chamedra of Yemar, he came in front of Yemar and he said, "Amar lo sliku le tefillin, go take off your tefillin, give it to him." My kamash malan, what's the chiddush of that? Masnitzin here, Mishnah says that it's included in all your nechasim. What's the chiddush of this story? As a Mishnah says, "Amakdish nechasim malan lo tefilav," that you have to give it as well. Ma'udim, I would have thought, "Hasam udesavar mitzvah kavidna," that when it comes to Hekdish, I'm doing a mitzvah. Aval enyan zivuni, when it comes to sale mitzvah digufei lo, you wouldn't include your tefillin. Lo zavin inish, that a person wouldn't sell a mitzvah digufei, kamash malan, that it's included when you say it's all my stuff. Shkoyach. Now we can continue our conversation.